and welcome to Dissecting Philosophy with Dr. McDonald. In this episode, we start off a new book, Herbert Marcuse's One Dimensional Man, getting stuck into chapter one, which is called The New Forms of Social Control. So overall, chapter one then deals with quite a number of different topics, but overall, the topic of totalitarianism, and then starting to build upon this concept of one-dimensional thought. So we've got a nice set of quotes to work through and have a good old discussion about as we go through. So let's get started into it then, dealing first of all with totalitarianism. As Marcuse here states from page 5, by virtue of the way it has organized its technological base, contemporary industrial society tends to be totalitarian. For totalitarian is not only a terroristic political coordination of society, but also a non-terroristic economic technical coordination which operates through the manipulation of needs by vested interests. It thus precludes the emergence of an effective opposition against the whole. Not only a specific form of government or party rule makes for totalitarianism, but also a specific system of production and distribution which may well be compatible with a pluralism of parties, newspapers, countervailing powers, and so forth. So what we then have to start us off is the relation into totalitarianism. What does that mean is that we traditionally think of totalitarian governments, following on our lovely discussion of Hannah Arendt's The Origins of Totalitarianism, all to do with either specifically the Nazi Party in Germany or with the Communist Party in Soviet Russia. So we have those two key examples of totalitarian governments. And so here we have Marcuse say it's not only this specific instance of either in Nazi Germany or in Soviet Russia. Why is this the case? As he says there, not only a specific form of government or party rule makes for totalitarianism. Why is that? But also a system of production and distribution which may as well be compatible with a pluralism of parties, newspapers, countervailing powers, and so forth. What is Marcuse starting to make us think about is all the ways in which we are in our advanced industrial period, as you would say, that we have a collection of newspapers, various different parties, and so on. But underlying that, what's going on is ultimately we have a society with a set of norms and a set of values. And what are those things going to be projecting back onto the people? And that's what Marcuse wants us to start thinking about. What is the things that's been underlying all these various different opinions that's going on? As he says here from an interview from 1964, and this is from the YouTube channel Biophilly 2, so it's an easy enough thing to look up on YouTube. Just type in Herbert Marcuse interview and you'll nicely see it pop up, Biophilly 2, and you could pop and have a great listen to it because it's an absolutely fantastic interview. But the key point that we want to take out of it from the point on totalitarianism is here he says from the interview, totalitarian tendencies are beginning to show even in societies which are still democratic, which preserve the democratic process and institutions, which have several parties, which even may have countervailing forces. By totalitarian, I mean the constellation or situation in which the private as well as public existence of man, of the individual, is controlled. is exposed to standardized required ways of behavior, standardized imposed values, standardized imposed needs. This can be done by private as well as public bureaucracy. It can be done via perfectly democratic media of mass communication. It is in a way a consequence of technical progress, which implies mass production and mass distribution. Both in turn require a considerable degree of standardization, a considerable degree of submission of the individual to pre-given and superimposed values, ideas, aspirations, goals, and so on. So here we have really quite a key crucial thing from what Marcuse is trying to argue for. We normally think of totalitarian in this very limited sense with very specific examples of the Nazis and the communists. But here, as he's saying, it can happen within a democratic society. And of course, what is he referring to here? It can be quite happily happen here in the UK as well as America and elsewhere that's democratic. So then what exactly is totalitarian? What is going on? As we go back to that key point in the quote, by totalitarian I mean the constellation or situation in which the private as well as public existence of man, of the individual, is controlled, is exposed to standardized required ways of behavior, standardized imposed values, standardized imposed needs. So if we think about it in terms of this, then what exactly is society giving back to us is, on the one hand, he's saying, we have a required way in which we have to act on a day-to-day basis, in which we have to behave. Then also, what does society give to us is a set of norms and a set of values that is ultimately going to be shared by that society. Let's say it's within American society because it's a nice, easy enough example. What will all of the parties, for the political parties, as well as all the newspapers, privilege is specifically American values. So regardless of where it sits, whether it's left-wing or whether it's right-wing and so forth, that doesn't matter, because what do they all have in common is precisely all having that same shared set of privileging American values and an American way of life. The same thing can be said irregardless of what country we're in and regardless of what parties we go for. Everything is going to be towards this whole standard set of imposed values and what society says that it is through these values. As well as we have a standardized imposed set of needs, what are these needs? It's not something that's very difficult, of course, to understand. What do we all need is precisely food and to go shopping, to go get groceries. Everybody has all those same standard needs, regardless of where you are in society, whether you're wealthy or not. Everybody needs food. Everybody needs to go to get groceries and so on. So what is the thing that Marcuse is starting to make us aware of and starting to make us think about is the way in which we become submissive, as he says there, a considerable degree of submission of the individual to pre-given and superimposed values, ideas, aspirations, goals, and so on. What is happening in the midst of all this submission, of course, is everybody is thinking the same things, ideas, everybody has the same aspirations, everybody has the same goals. And what do you ultimately end up with is a bunch of clones that everybody just goes along with the flow, as he's like to say, and therefore don't rock the boat in any given way. Everybody thinks the same. Everybody shares the same values and ideas. There's nobody that's different in that given way. There's nobody who has something that's an overall different opinion that would rock the boat. ultimately. Why is that? Because then we start to build upon his idea of one-dimensional thought. And this is from page 14. The productive apparatus and the goods and services which it produces sell or impose the social system as a whole. The means of mass transportation and communication, the commodities of lodging, food, and clothing, the irresistible output of the entertainment and information industry carry with them prescribed attitudes and habits, certain intellectual and emotional reactions which bind the consumers more or less pleasantly to the producers and through the latter to the whole. The products indoctrinate and manipulate. What a fantastic line that is. The products indoctrinate and manipulate. They promote a false consciousness which is immune against its falsehood. And as these beneficial products become available to more individuals in more social classes, the indoctrination they carry ceases to be publicity. It becomes a way of life. It is a good way of life, much better than before. And as a way of life, it militates against qualitative change. Thus, a pattern of one-dimensional thought and behavior in which ideas, aspirations and objectives that, by their content, transcend the established universe of discourse and action are either repelled or reduced to terms of this universe. They are redefined by the rationality of the given system and its quantitative extension. So we have quite a nice technical thing for us to go and have a little chat about in a minute. So let's go back and have a breakdown and a talk about this fantastic quote from page 14. The productive apparatus and the goods and services which it produces sell or impose the social system as a whole. The means of mass transportation and communication, the commodities of lodging, food and clothing, the irresistible output of the entertainment and information industry carry with them prescribed attitudes and habits, certain intellectual and emotional reactions which bind the consumers more or less pleasantly to the producers and through the latter to the whole. The products indoctrinate and manipulate. So we have an absolutely fantastic line for us to start off on. Regardless of what it is, whether it's lodging, as he says, food, clothing, what is everything trying to do? Everything has an effect upon us psychologically. That is to say, when we see a certain food product and brand, we are meant to react in a given way. Ultimately, most things in life are all going towards a pleasurable relationship with the brand and ultimately therefore having that prescribed attitude of therefore thinking it's something pleasurable to eat. For instance, you see the McDonald's Big Mac, you associate therefore with McDonald's this idea of pleasure and therefore carry with it all that emotional baggage and weight to it, that not only will it give you a pleasurable experience but also make you happy in the first place because it's such a delicious thing to eat. Doesn't everybody want to have a nice Big Mac from McDonald's? As we nicely get back into Big Macs as well from the previous discussion of Guy Debord's Society of the Spectacle. But it's the given point, regardless of whether we're dealing with McDonald's, Burger King, any takeaway places that we like, or be that within Apple products, for instance, we have this association with Apple that is going to give us something that's absolutely stylish, beautiful to look at. Irrespective of what the cost is, it's an Apple product. And with that, there's a whole weight that's attached to it of being something that's beautiful and fantastic to have. Everybody else has it. Why shouldn't you? Just like everybody else has an iPhone, why shouldn't you also be like everybody else having an iPhone as well? So within that, we have this whole lovely explanation of the first part. We have this whole emotional connection to brands. We have this whole emotional and psychological connection to it, as well as people then, through all that, become indoctrinated and manipulated through the brands. What does that mean? That means that there's a really interesting thing that's going on that Marcuse is also making us aware of. When we have specifically Apple products, for instance, they're very much indoctrinating. What does that mean? When you buy an Apple product, you become indoctrinated into the very ethos of whatever Apple is selling you. That is their values, and therefore attached onto that as well is an ethics, that they're also going to be in arguing to be ethically good for the environment and so on, all those things. So what happens through this is that there's like a pseudo-religious experience and religious connotations, let's say, when we deal with specific brands. It's not just simply McDonald's or Apple. Why not? Because within those brands, they indoctrinate people to specifically want to always have that feeling of pleasure with McDonald's. Or good one, of course, that frequently pops up is Coca-Cola. What does Coca-Cola always want us to do? Doesn't care about the fact that it's a soda drink or a pop drink whatsoever. What does it want to sell you is everything other than what Coca-Cola is, like it's a best friend, for instance. What does that ultimately do is indoctrinate us to the brand. We become part of that brand. We become part of lovers of that brand. And interestingly enough as well, we therefore start to act as a little bit of influencers in a contemporary context as well. We love a specific brand, and therefore we try to influence other people to also love that brand. And hence why we start to see the very religious style of aspect to it. Why is this? Because through this love of a specific product, you're indoctrinated to it, and therefore what do you try to do is indoctrinate other people. Of course, we don't have people run around people's doors just like Jehovah's Witnesses do for Apple products and Coca-Cola. Why not? Because they don't need to. They have advertising and so forth. They can go on vast, you know, marketing sprees and all that stuff. What does all that do? Indoctrinate people to their products and their values, and people therefore love that brand and then also want to indoctrinate other people at the same time. As Marcuse says there, the indoctrination they carry ceases to be publicity. It becomes a way of life. It is a good way of life, much better than before. And as a good way of life, it militates against quality of change, which means everything's always got to be the same. Same experience that we've got to have, same relation into the brand, same expectations that your white's always going to be white when you use the washing up powder or so forth. And therefore, what happens into this is that in a contemporary context, as he says, thus emerges this one-dimensional thought and behavior in which we are conditioned to think in a given way through the manipulation and indoctrination into brands. And therefore, what happens is that the ideas, aspirations, and objectives that by their content transcend the established universe of discourse and action are either repelled or reduced to terms of this universe. So what does that mean? Ultimately, things are either rejected or accepted, and everything is therefore changed and manipulated into fitting into, let's say, the values of Coca-Cola or the values of Apple. Ideas are changed and manipulated in order for them to be fit into whichever brand it is. The ideas, aspirations, and objectives, they'll all be moved around and manipulated by whatever consumer brand that it is. So then, let's keep on building on this idea and go into another quote all about needs, and specifically talking about false needs, as Marcuse says. So as it says here, we may distinguish both true and false needs. False are those which are superimposed upon the individual by particular social interests in his repression. Most of the prevailing society needs to relax, to have fun, to behave and consume accordance with the advertisements, to love and hate what others love and hate, belong to this category of false needs, no matter how much needs may have become an individual's own, reproduced and fortified by the conditions of his existence, no matter how much he identifies himself with them and finds himself in their satisfaction, they continue to be what they were from the beginning, products of a society whose dominant interest demands repression. What exactly is happening in the midst of all this indoctrination, as that we have, is this incredible focus on society, as he says there, by needs to relax, to have fun, therefore to have a pleasurable experience, to behave and consume in accordance with what the advertisements say, to love and hate what other people love and hate. All this whole relaxation in relation to consumer society, as well as this sense of conformity within consumer society as well. Everybody loving a specific brand overall and hating another brand and so forth. Everybody joining in within that whole social ideas of loving a specific thing, hating another thing and so on. Like sports teams is such a great example of that. Because ultimately sports teams are brands in which people get really passionate and specifically go completely pseudo-religious crazy over as well for their devotion and so forth to this whichever specific sports team that it is, be it for soccer or football here in the UK, or be that for whichever other sport that you fancy. People have all this immense level of passion and devotion to whichever sports team that there is. But here, what's so interesting as well, what Marcuse is saying, is that we have a suppression of the individual. What suppression is that exactly? Of a person through their capacity to be able to think for themselves. Why? Because all the thought process is already being done for them. How is that? Because advertising will say exactly what you need to love is what we have. It's just this whole mass consumer society is through just loving specific brands as we're talking about. Then we also have in relation to society as well as this whole prevailing of needing to relax. Therefore, we have all this relation to going on holidays during summertime and so forth. All this behavior is therefore conditioned as well, is to say, well, therefore, at this time of the year, we need to go on holiday. At this time of the year, we need to buy presents for children because it's Christmas and so on. We have become all conditioned into what society tells us to do and what society expects out of us at the same time. And what do? If we don't conform to what society says, ultimately, is that we become the bad guy, ultimately. Imagine not buying the presents for children on Christmas, for example, even if you don't even believe in Christ or the divinity of Christ at all, it's still very much expected of you to go along with what everybody else says and does, because that's what's expected of you by society. But here, what's also interesting is what Marcuse is also picking up on here. Well, what about that one person that doesn't want to participate upon what everybody else is doing at the same time? Doesn't want to follow along with this idea of herd mentality. But then precisely we see through this whole relation into doing what everybody else does and so forth, buying presents at Christmas and so on, no matter how much we have satisfaction precisely in consumer products and brands and so forth, it's all in this relation to everybody having the same experience, having the same level of enjoyment, having the same opinions, and everything represses this whole sense of thinking for yourself, having an opinion that differs. And interestingly enough, there's another nice little quote there. As long as they are kept incapable of being autonomous, as long as they are indoctrinated and manipulated down to their very instincts, their answer to the question cannot be taken as their own. Why not? Because people will just immediately answer back in terms of their own indoctrination of, well, everybody should just buy presents on Christmas just because that's how it's done, or everybody should just love Apple products because that's just how it's done, everybody else loves Apple products, and so on. And therefore, through their own level of indoctrination, we have a problem of lack of thinking for ourselves, ultimately, that Marcuse is really delving us into, that we can't take people seriously and what their opinions are, because they themselves love the product so much that they are going back into those points of trying to indoctrinate us into them at the same time, ultimately, as we were just saying not that long ago, trying to sell ourselves ultimately in relation to contemporary society, ultimately trying to become an influencer willingly through trying to therefore adopt a brand in a pseudo-religious context and therefore trying to influence other people at the same time to adopt that same level of devotion that you want to. There's all this whole level of devotion and faith and so forth in specific consumer brands. So next, let's get into talk about preconditioning. As he states, the preconditioning does not start with the mass production of radio and television and with the centralization of their control. The people enter this stage as preconditioned receptacles of long standing. The decisive difference is in the flattening out of the contrast or conflict between the given and the possible, between the satisfied and unsatisfied needs. Here, the so-called equalization of class distinctions reveals its ideological function. If the worker and his boss enjoy the same television program and visit the same resort places, if the typist is as attractively made up as the daughter of her employer, if the Negro owns a Cadillac, if they all read the same newspaper, then this assimilation indicates not the disappearance of classes, but the extent to which the needs and satisfactions that serve the preservation of the establishment are shared by the underlying population. So, as it states, going back into it, the preconditioning does not start with the mass production of radio and television and with the centralization of their control. The people enter this stage as preconditioned receptacles of long standing. So, ultimately, here we have this immense level upon the media from Marcuse's argument as well, because what is one of the main forms that everybody will be adopting values and so forth, all the same things, adopting into consumer products and so forth, is all through the media. So, therefore, he says, well, actually, this level of acceptance of everybody loving the same things and so forth doesn't immediately either start with the radio, television, or with the media in general. People are preconditioned to the specific herd-like understanding of things. And there's quite a nice relation into Nietzsche here that's been popping up as we go along. And that is Nietzsche's concept of herd mentality. Is that Nietzsche thinks of this psychological underlying concept of the way in which people go along with what everybody else is doing at the same time called herd mentality. And it's very much in the same vein that Marcuse is also trying to think here. We have a society that's ultimately making us like sheep, ultimately making us think all the same, act all the same, and behave the same like we have in relation to specifically loving and hating things and so on. Everybody all sharing specifically the same behavior and habits as everybody else. So there's this psychological underpinning to exactly how we're preconditioned into the acceptance of this. This is something that's not new in any given way. This is not something that's just happened over the course of the 20th century. As we were going in to use the examples, of course, what is herd mentality also relation into is specifically religious worship and so forth, all has that same sense of everybody worshipping and believing in the same divinity or divinities, and everybody sharing the same values and opinions and so forth of whichever religious organization that it is. So therefore we have this sort of psychological preconditioning examples from humanity's past. Then let's go into it a little bit more. The decisive difference is in the flattening out of the contrast or conflict between the given and the possible, between the satisfied and unsatisfied needs. That is to say, easily enough, what do we have is no longer any conflict between satisfied and unsatisfied. Why is that? Because everything's more or less in a push to become satisfied. Even if you're unsatisfied, let's say, if you don't like a specific thing, they'll always try to make you love the brand in some given way. Let's say you have a bad experience at Starbucks coffee, you complain to customer services about that experience, they'll still say and empathize with you about that experience, but give you a form of compensation for you to go back and buy another coffee in the future, for a nice example of that. So everything's going towards a removal of any conflict, gone towards any idea of a difference of opinion, in another way to put it like that. So therefore, removing any sense of conflict, everything becomes flattened out. And also here we see, in relation to the worker and the boss, as he says, enjoying the same TV program, like recently we could say Game of Thrones, very much cultural phenomenon, regardless of who you are in society, that everybody can go and love Game of Thrones, for example. Then everybody can go and also visit the same resort places like Disney World and so forth. So ultimately, what do we see is that on the one hand, we have this relation into herd mentality and a psychological basis for that. But also, as he says here, rounding off this paragraph, this assimilation indicates not the disappearance of classes, but the extent to which the needs and satisfactions that serve the preservation of the establishment are shared by the underlying population. So that in and itself is quite an interesting line, because we're also preconditioned to serve the preservation of the establishment. And this is something that's shared by all society. And something that's quite interesting as well is where Marcuse talks about in the interview specifically, how can there be specifically opinions that are anarchical and so forth? How can you have at the same time all these various different potentially what to see dangerous in inverted commas opinions that ultimately there? Let's say punk rock is a nice example of that. Why was punk rock, with its anarchical vision and so forth, allowed to exist within society? Is because, easily enough, reply back to that, what does he say? Is that we can afford this dissent because it remains ineffective. Which is to say, it doesn't rock the boat and it's not a threat to the established order whatsoever. What ultimately is given to us through all these given products in society and through various different forms of media and everything that we go on to it is ultimately our conformity with the status quo and our conformity with the establishment. Anything that has seemed to be against the establishment in and of itself is really saying, well, it's allowed to exist because it's not really an a threat to the establishment whatsoever. There's not really going to be anarchy on the streets. People are not really going to take to the streets and therefore try to overthrow the government. What ultimately do we have is just this little blip. There's just more or less a little consumer thing that people will just go and enjoy for that brief period of time. So, interestingly enough, in the midst of all this, in relation to herd mentality, as well as our religious relationship into society and consumer products and so forth, we also have this preservation of the establishment happening at the same time. So as we've got another great quote from page 16, as it states, outside the academic establishment, the far-reaching change in all our habits of thought is more serious. It serves to coordinate ideas and goals with those exacted by the prevailing system, to enclose them in the system, and to repel those which are irreconcilable with the system. The reign of such a one-dimensional reality does not mean that materialism rules, and that the spiritual, metaphysical, and bohemian occupations are petering out. On the contrary, there is a great deal of worship together this week. Why not try God, Zen, existentialism, and the beat ways of life, and so forth? But such modes of protest and transcendence are no longer contradictory to the status quo and no longer negative. They are rather the ceremonial part of practical behaviorism, its harmless negation, and are quickly digested by the status quo as part of its healthy diet. So, as we were just saying in relation to punk rock, it's something that's quickly digested by the status quo. Ultimately, to say you can have your cake and eat it too is another way of putting it. You can have precisely contrasts and views all prevailing within society. That's what's changed about contemporary society that Marcuse is trying to say. In the past, you would just have simply one overarching predominant view with the monarch and so forth, but within advanced industrial society, within capitalist society and so forth, what do we have as multiple views all managing to coexist precisely at the same time? That is to say, we can have materialism with an emphasis upon science and so forth at the same time coexisting quite happily with the spiritual, metaphysical, bohemian occupations, beat ways of life, at the same time as existentialism as a movement for philosophy that precisely is very much atheistic. So you can have all these different lifestyle choices all coexisting simultaneously and also against each other at the same time, just like for food choices as well. We have veganism very much coexisting with people who choose to eat meat, in contrast to that, as well as vegetarianism also coexisting at the same time. Ultimately, we have all these various different lifestyle choices, but what does that all mean at the end of the day? It all means that they're all quickly digested as part of the status quo, as part of its healthy diet. The fact you can have so much contrast in views is all absolutely perfectly fine, because it goes back into what Marcuse was saying. It can afford all these different levels of dissent. Another way we could rephrase that is we can have all these various different contrasting views because they all remain ineffective. Nothing is really trying to overthrow the established order in any given way. In fact, we could say all these given established views and all their contrasting is really great for the capitalist system and for our society, because it precisely allows for all the various different people to go and run around and indoctrinate people to their own viewpoints, like vegetarianism and veganism, and run around and precisely consume within their given specialist fields. And to have all those little things that you would have also to indulge. There is no such thing as an alternative lifestyle, really, anymore, would be another way of putting it. Why? Because you can simply go on the internet and you'd have all your quote-unquote alternative clothing brands and everything like that all readily available to you. Everything's all part of the healthy diet of consumer society. Everything's all part of consuming brands. So overall, what can we say wrapping up then? Let's go back to those key points on totalitarianism and one-dimensional thought. And that's to say, we have, in relation to Marcuse's key points about the individual, that the individual is controlled, exposed to standardized required ways of behavior, standardized imposed values, and standardized imposed needs. This means that we have a relation into one-dimensional thought and behavior in which ideas, aspirations, and objectives are the same. And then, as we touched upon there, rounding off, is that even ideas that are meant to be quote-unquote differ from the norm, in a way, are still part of the overall status quo and preserving the established order because they're no threat whatsoever to that established order. So, many thanks for listening to the episode. Feel free to drop me an email at my address at dissectingphilosophy@gmail.com. Check out the Patreon at patreon.com/dissectingphilosophy, where there's a full discussion of Slavoj Žižek's Pandemic 1, as well as an ongoing discussion of Žižek's Pandemic 2, Chronicles of Time Lost, and that is dealing with our contemporary situation with coronavirus and Žižek's thoughts on that. The first episodes for those are completely free, whilst the rest of them are requiring a £5 subscription, or your regional equivalent. Also, feel free to tip me a coffee at ko-fi.com/dissectingphilosophy, ko-fi.com/dissectingphilosophy. And lastly, I can be found on Twitter at @IAmARubberMan. Many thanks for listening, and I hope you'll join me next time.